Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Insurance to suit your needs. Protect your home, car or van with Zurich.
Now, turning to the United States, all four living ex-presidents have come forward decrying racism and injustice as the United States continues to reel from the death of George Floyd. Later today, the American civil rights activist Al Sharpton will lead the eulogy at Mr. Floyd's memorial service. At least six people have died in violence connected with protests. As President Trump's message of law and order manifests on the streets of Washington, D.C., where thousands of troops and agents and officers are patrolling, my next guest is David Frum. He's a former special advisor to President George W. Bush. He's a writer at The Atlantic and he's author of Trumpocalypse, Restoring American Democracy. David Frum, you're welcome to Drive Time.
Thank you so much.
And you're based in Washington, D.C. It's a city at the moment with a curfew. It's a city where your White House is under siege, where protests take place at night, reports of tear gas. What is it like for you there at the moment?
You know, that description, I mean, when I walk around the city with, I have two of my three children here with me, two daughters, we walk around the city watching what is going on, and we make a joke, Washington, city on the knife edge, and then somebody bicycles past us, or dog walkers, or frisbees. It is not only quiet here, but it is getting quieter each time. Fortunately, we have not been hit by the kind of looting that you have seen, the criminal looting that you've seen in New York and Los Angeles. There have been attacks on some drugstores where people have stolen cigarettes and Sudafed to make drugs out of, and those kinds of targets of organized criminal groups. But the protests have been good-natured, and each night they become more good-natured. And after that one terrible evening where of tear gassing, the police have also begun to have – there's been a kind of moral shift. Last night, and each night is more quiet. The curfew is later and later. Last night it was 11 o'clock. And President Trump has been getting the signal from the military. We are not on board with whatever plans you have. So be careful because, you are going to have to use, other kinds of resources, to do the kinds of things, the terrible things that the president probably would like to do.
You're a registered Republican. Your man is in the White House. Do you believe you're getting any leadership from Donald Trump at the moment? And do you hold out any hope that leadership might come?
Well, I am, as you say, a registered Republican. I don't regard Donald Trump. I regard him as someone who's a pirate, who's boarded the ship and is steering it in dangerous directions. I don't regard him as my man at all. The president is doing his utmost to lead. What Donald Trump understands, his only political resource is conflict, and he needs to stoke the conflict. And it's important to understand, and because it's so dramatic, and photographers take these tightly cropped pictures where a fire that is like one, you know, that is maybe a square foot in dimension, looks like a roaring blaze, and you shoot through the fire, this little fire, and you see the Capitol, and you think the whole city's on fire. What the most striking scenes last night were people setting up impromptu music booths and singing and dancing on 16th Street.
But are you downplaying the protest we've seen across the United States in the wake of George Floyd's murder?
Well, the only protests I've seen with my own eyes are those here in Washington. So for every other city in the United States, I, like you, must rely on the cameras, on social media, and on information. And as I said, in other cities with maybe less of a police presence, there has been more disorder. But I think we are being invited to see disorder in order to make people frightened in ways that it is completely unnecessary to be frightened. And it's important that the United States has become in the past generation such a more peaceful and law-abiding country. I mean, you mentioned the figure of six deaths. That's not the figure that I've heard, but it may be right. In the 1992 riots in Los Angeles after the attack on Rodney King, there were 50 to 60 people killed in one city. Here in Washington, our worst casualty seems to be a policeman with a broken leg.
You say we're being invited to see disorder. Who's inviting us to see disorder?
The president wants you to believe that Antifa and the Black Panthers and gangs of domestic terrorists are besieging the White House instead of a lot of George Washington University and Howard University students with signs taking selfies and singing.
So when he tells governors across the state, you have to dominate, if you don't, you're wasting your time. When he stokes the politics of division, how dangerous is that going to be? And does that play to President Trump, his base, and his potential re-election, or does that play against him?
The president in Washington is pushing out the security perimeter around the White House wider and wider and wider. I saw this last night when I was driving home from the last tour I did last night. And it's just now a massive perimeter around the White House, blocks and blocks and blocks. And and there's no challenge to that perimeter. No one's attacking it. People just move away and go elsewhere. So he is indeed dominating the streets, but he's losing the fight because the people are unafraid. And you can see the effect on the troops. The last time I saw a troop presence like this in Washington, except, of course, during inaugurations, when it's very much a police presence, not a military presence. The last time I saw a military presence like this was in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, when I worked in the Bush White House, and it was a terrifying time. And there were National Guards, people all over the streets, and traffic was restricted. And shop people would come out, and it's boring and hot. I mean, Washington's a hot city, hot and boring to be on patrol all day. And people from the shops would come out and bring the National Guardsmen and the military people cookies and bottles of water and brownies and make it clear, we're so happy you're here and we know it's hot. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. You know, I don't see much conflict except for that one bad night but I also don't see a lot of welcome. And I think the troops, who are citizens, who are voters, they're not different from us. They have that sense of, this is all kind of stupid. And it's all kind of deliberate, and it's all kind of stoke an appearance of conflicts to fool people who are watching TV. It's not impressing anybody who's seeing it in real life.
Now, we've four living ex-presidents coming out, sounding out against what is happening at the moment, against racial injustice. We've seen the retired former Joint Chiefs. We've seen retired Secretaries of Defence, the existing holder of the office as well. And I heard Samantha Power today, a former card-carrying Democrat, but former US ambassador to the UN. And she said that the behaviour of the United States Republican Party is shocking at the moment. This is your party.
Yeah. It's not good to say. You would like to see people stand up. I mean, it's certainly, we've had a United States senator publish this morning an op-ed in the Washington Post calling for direct military intervention in the streets of American cities. Meanwhile, the military itself is signaling, we want no part of this. When the military comes into civilian context in the United States, it's after a hurricane, after a tornado, some other natural disaster, or it is after a very severe riot like that which we had in 1992 in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. To keep peace. But it's a citizen army, and they're not Cossacks, and they don't want to be assigned to play the role of Cossacks.
David, what are you going to do in November?
Oh, that's easy. I'll vote for Joe Biden, of course. It'll be the second time in my life I've cast a Democratic ballot. I hope not to have to make a habit out of it. But it's very important that President Trump not only lose, but that he lose badly enough that the party understand that this didn't work. So a lot of the book I've written is a path for what a future conservative politics should look like post-Trump. But it's very important that Trump not only fail, but be seen to fail. And we're on the way to that happening. The latest poll showed President Trump and Joe Biden running neck and neck in Texas. Now, I don't think in the end Joe Biden will win Texas, but I do think that President Trump will have to spend tens of millions of Republican dollars to put ads on the air in Texas, which Republicans normally don't have to do. And when you look at the map of the 10 biggest cities in Texas, of the 10 biggest cities, 8 are likely to go Democratic in 2020. Trump can only count on Lubbock for sure and Fort Worth, the fifth biggest city. And even Fort Worth is touch and go.
So, well, I'll put it this way. Will you be holding your nose voting for Joe Biden in November? And how many other Republicans do you think will go the way you're going?
Well, there was a mean joke in the first 2 years of the Trump administration that never Trump Republicans, you're not a political party, you're a dinner party. But the 2018 election, the congressional election, which the Democrats won their biggest congressional victory since Watergate, They didn't win that victory in progressive parts of America. They already had those seats. The Democrats won. They won the seat that used to be held by Newt Gingrich. It was held by Republicans from 1978 to 2018. They won the seat that was held by – that George H.W. Bush held, and that was Republican from 1966 to 2018. Eric Cantor, who was the number two Republican in the House of Representatives under Barack Obama, and he represented the area north and west of Richmond, the capital of the state of Virginia, his seat went Democratic in 2018. The prosperous area south of the Potomac River around the fanciest shopping malls in the Washington, D.C. area, it's been Republican for 60 of the past 66 years. Democrat won it. And all four of those winners, by the way, were women, and women with conservative outlooks.
Can I ask you a very brief question? If Donald Trump loses in November, how difficult will it be to move him out of the White House?
If it's close, there could be trouble. There could be trouble. And let's hope not. But that I think he is the sort of person to do it. But we do have legal mechanisms. The Electoral College will meet in the middle of December after the vote. And it will certify a winner. And once the Electoral College certifies a winner, and if it's not Donald Trump, then he's on the wrong side of the law. And whatever he does at that point is a lawless action. And the inauguration day is in the Constitution. He can't change that. That is January 20th of 2021. And on that day, if he has been certified the loser, he's not the president anymore. And if he refuses to leave the White House, we have a squatter problem, but we don't have a political leadership problem.
Your book is called Trumpocalypse: Restoring American Democracy. David Frum, thank you for joining us. We'll